Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
All right. So sorry about the confusion on the time. I forgot to reiterate what we were talking about when we started talking again.
My little white screen, so they're not lighting up my face.
I gotcha. Yeah, I finally had to get a little tiny light over here just because obviously this is just a room in our apartment. This was not designed for, this is not a studio. Or the only light is behind me, which does not help whatsoever.
Right.
So how is the weather down there? This is the chit chat part of the interview.
Windy.
Oh, so you got what we had yesterday. We sent it on down. It was ridiculous yesterday in Nebraska.
Yeah, there's like, I mean, okay. So I come from Southern California. So when Georgia sends out these fire warnings, it's really difficult for me not to laugh because they pretty much get automatically sent out if the humidity goes below 25%.
Which, yeah, I get that. It was actually kind of funny. It actually almost snowed the other day in the morning. It's like you could see a flake here and there.
Right.
And then it started raining. And the next thing I know, they popped up a fire advisory. I'm like, it just rained. What are you talking about?
Right. Yeah. And it's just, it's difficult. It's difficult for me sometimes. When I first moved out here, my brother-in-law at the time started going on about how we were in the middle of a drought. And my husband and I are looking around at all the greenery and going, I don't think so. No, this isn't what a drought looks like.
Yeah, no. I mean, you grew up in California. I grew up in Arizona. So yeah, I totally get
that. Yeah. We were just a little skeptical of the idea that this qualified as drought. Different standards.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah. So, it's been nice though. It's starting to get warm again.
I do like the bookshelves in the background. That's always a nice.
Yeah. Depending on, they're a little messy right now, but.
No, but it's still the books, I'm a big book person.
Yeah. The guy who owned this house before we bought it was a contractor and he did a lot of woodwork. And so he has all of these built-in bookcases and not going to lie, that was part of the appeal.
Gotcha. Yeah, I do miss, we moved out of a house just downsizing a couple years back, and I really do miss all my extra bookshelves.
Yeah. Yeah, we actually have a library, which is very special.
All right, so I'm going to play the intro real quick here.
Okay.
And I've got you up on Zoom now.
All right.
I'm going to do what I call the pre-ramble. As if you've watched this before, I tend to ramble, so this is just for fun. Welcome to my Twitch channel. If you look down below, there's an about on there. You can click on the about, and that'll tell you all of our websites. You can go over to griftkin.com. Obviously, I didn't say that username a lot before I picked it, or I would have picked something different. Go ahead and hang out there and you can see who's going to be on and when. Also, you can, there's a link to the YouTube video, which will be posted later. That'll be available tomorrow, roughly about the same time. I usually post it the next day. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and get started here. I'm actually going to start off not about your writing. I didn't want to ask you a question. You've done a lot of your own artwork. That is correct, right?
Yeah, I used to do it professionally.
Right. And you, if I understand correctly, you have done some of the artwork that is in the books.
All of it. All yeah. Of,
okay.
The only artwork.
Sure. So.
Yeah. No. The only artwork I didn't do is the covers, which Lars Grant West did and has done a fabulous, incredible job with. So.
Which I get. I just wondered, did you feel any extra pressure doing your own artwork, or do you feel that it's actually easier because you're drawing exactly what's in your head?
Not gonna lie, there's a couple of times where I was like on deadlines and those were coming up, and you know, there was a certain amount of I have to get all this writing done, but I also have to get all this art done. So yeah, there were moments. I never felt any sort of pressure in regards to the art itself, because like you said, I'm gonna do it exactly the way I want it. But yeah, there's definitely been some moments, particularly for some of the books, where there might have been a lot of different chapter art pieces that were required. As it went further on, I was able to reuse some of them because some of the same ones would come up again. But I do distinctly remember for the second book, you know, my editor being like, "Oh well, but you're just going to reuse all this, right?" And I'm like, "Yeah, nope, it's all got to be new."
Gotcha. And also, on following up on that, obviously the art side, but also you're a graphic designer. Do you feel that graphic designer has helped you with your writing at all?
I've gotten that question before, and I probably think that it's more of just an artist thing than a graphic designer specifically thing. Certainly, you know, I'm trained for color, you know, that's what I've done for a healthy chunk of my life. So I am very sensitive to color, which shows a lot of things in the book revolve around color. So, you know, there's definitely been an impact on the work.
Gotcha. I just know for like me myself, and again, I'm obviously not a professional writer by any way, shape, or form. I didn't know if that was something that would help you, because being able to paint a scene when you're trying to write, and the fact that you've had this before, is like, hey, this is what we want it to look like. And so you've gone maybe through that process. I didn't know if that was helpful or not in your writing career. I think
they're different
time.
They're different skills. They're different skills. You know, like when you, as an artist, particularly as a 2D artist, you are trying to interpret a 3D space as a 2D medium, and that requires some adjustments, and then it requires some ability to disconnect certain parts of your brain that are trying to tell you what you're seeing instead of what you're actually seeing. But as a writer, you're trying to trigger someone else's imagination. So it's not a matter of the same kind of interpretation that's going on.
Gotcha. One question I didn't prepare you for, but I was thinking about it today because I was finishing up. And no, I did not get to the fourth book. I did finish up the third book though, Memory of Souls. And one of the things I've noticed throughout your book, and so I just have to ask you this question, are you a foodie?
I am a foodie. Yeah.
I just there was so much. You talked about the food so much, and like everything he ate, except maybe the porridge, was excellent. And so I just had this feeling is like, you must be sitting there going like, ooh, let's talk about this food. Ooh, let's talk about that food.
And it's funny because an awful lot of that food doesn't exist.
It does help to make the recipe turn out right every time, I'm sure.
Yeah. But I mean, like there are ingredients that really early on for the first book, Ruin of Kings, I had a couple of people come up to me and like, oh, is this a thing? Would you be interested in like creating a recipe based on this dish or based on this dish? And I was like, sure, but just understand that the ingredients that are in those dishes that I describe don't have real world counterparts. They're not
right.
This is Earth. So not everything is
Yeah, I don't think anybody's gonna be going for the roast elephant there. I got that. Like I said, I could really tell that your love of food kind of snuck its way into the book a little bit. Another thing I was going to ask you about, you know, things that change and whether or not they affect your writing. Do you notice a huge difference from when you were in LA, for instance, in Atlanta? Has it affected your, because it's a different climate and stuff like that, has it affected your scenery writing, where you meet different people and it affects your character writing?
You know, honestly, no, it hasn't. It really hasn't. I really enjoy living in Georgia. You know, it's particularly as somebody who grew up in an environment where greenery was kind of rare. It's lovely to be in a place where you can be surrounded by trees and be in the middle of the city. But no, I didn't really, you know, like Coeur was the environment and the setup that it was back in LA, that didn't really change. None of the stuff that was there really changed. In fact, I didn't even do any writing in a place that was even similar to a California climate until book three, and it's already well out here by that point. So
yeah, I think the desert climate that kind of maybe reminded me of the Southwest there. Yeah, like, you know, the whole intro thing. We're talking to Jen Lyons, by the way. Oh, my goodness. I just kind of jumped right into there. And I have been reading you, if this will tell you how long I've been reading you. My first book of yours is The Ark.
Okay.
Indie Next nomination due December 3rd, 2018. Please CC your blurb to Macmillan Rep. Sorry, Macmillan, I didn't get that blurb to you in time. Yeah, one of the pluses of working at a bookstore, you know, get to see people early on. Like I said, that's how long I've been reading your stuff. And I would have gotten through book four, I told you this earlier, except for the fact that, again, I read this back in like 2018. It actually says February 2019 on the end, so I'm guessing that was probably the publication date.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I have got to start over from the beginning. It has been so long. I remembered the gist of Ruin of Kings, but I totally was like, I can't remember everything about this. So I started from scratch.
Sure.
And these books are a little thick. And I don't say that, you know, hey, I love Robert McCammon's Swan Song, which is like over 1,000 pages. I don't have a problem with big books. But when you're trying to read four of them in just a couple of weeks,
sure.
And you have a 40-hour job, ran out a little time there. The audio, actually, I wanted to touch on some on the audiobooks, but if anybody is an audiobook fan, I can tell you that these things are about 20 hours each, a little over 20 hours.
First of all, one of them was 27.
It was a little up there. I mean, it's a chunk of time.
Yeah.
I may have fallen asleep to it a couple times a night and had to like, I learned early on to set my audiobook to, you know, play until such and such time, so I don't have to back up all the way. But the people who did the reading were great. I'm going to give them credit for that first. Second thing I'm going to tell you is if you do like audiobooks, you're probably going to want to be reading the physical copy of this along with it. Just for me personally, I don't know how many times I got confused, especially on this last book, and I'm like, wait, that's Vorkrath, not Zol. Now I can't even say his name. I've confused myself now. But a couple of the characters, I'm like, wait, who are we talking about again?
Yeah.
So definitely, you do need a scorecard to follow this. It's totally worth it. But you do need a scorecard, especially when, as I was telling you, you're the reincarnation. I'm like, okay, so-and-so says mom, but so is so-and-so. And the whole Doc versus Nikolai versus Tarandel versus...
I mean, you know, that's definitely one of those things where people came to me and said, this is very complicated. And I was just like, what do you mean?
I don't think what
do you mean?
Of course, people learn differently. I don't think it was complicated for me when I was reading the book. But I do think listening to the audiobook, there was a couple times because I'm not seeing the name and they sound a lot.
Right.
I'm like, wait, who is that again?
Yeah, I will freely admit that I didn't plan it this way, but I definitely created a series that is best read in physical form.
It is.
It is not, you know, how ebooks handle footnotes varies widely.
Yes.
And it's either going to be great and fine and no problem at all, or it's going to be a mess. And then, like you said, there's a lot of stuff if you're listening to the audiobook where it is helpful to be able, like, certainly the audiobook doesn't come with any of the maps. It doesn't come with the appendices. It doesn't come with the family charts. It doesn't come with, you know, any of the things that are in the back of the physical copy. So yeah, it's definitely a series that is better if you can get your hands on it. It's a bad series to pirate is, I guess, what I'm saying.
I can see that. I do have to say, did you, for instance, because I can't imagine drawing this, did you have a family tree that you were kind of working off of? Just for you to keep straight in your mind that this character is also this character. This character was the parent at such and such a time, but that was a previous life. And now it's a different character.
Okay. Not until the family trees got drawn later.
Well, then more power to you, because I don't know if I would have been able to keep all that straight. That was quite impressive. And don't get me wrong, I do love the story, and I know that it had to be written that way, but I do know a few people that would probably be looking at this going, now wait, who's who? They're going to have to like have a little picture next to them going,
sure,
this person is so-and-so.
Yeah. Yeah, I think my editor probably wanted to kill me when she realized that all of the Vane had family name first.
Gotcha. Yep.
She was like, "You did what?" I'm like,
"But you know, that's maybe just an American thing or an English thing, maybe even, because there are other cultures where the family sure. name does come first."
But I ran it all together, and because I ran it all together, people weren't.
We stick with what we're used to.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally get that. But you did explain that, though. I think it was in book two. It was either book one or book two. I know you did explain the whole name yep. scheme. So it's not like we were just left to figure it out on our own.
Yeah, no, I think I explained it more than once even, but it's fine. Yeah, no, I mean, I get it. It's just a thing where, for me...
Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
It was never a problem to keep all of it straight. And I had to kind of get used to the idea that was not going to be true for my readers and that I was going to have to explain stuff and spell stuff out. So,
yeah. One thing I thought was different that you did, because in book one, I wasn't totally expecting it. I know you've got a big thing for dragons. And I think book two and three have been out long enough that I'm not going to be doing any major spoilers here. But let's just say, and I will try to avoid spoilers, there are no baby dragons in this. The way that you did them. And I thought that was a different take on the whole dragon thing. Was that always the plan, or was that just something that you kind of came up with? You knew you were going to do dragons, but you wanted to do a different twist, or was this always your vision for them?
Well, I mean, I haven't made any secret about the fact that this started out as a D&D game. So, because it did. It started out as a really long-running D&D game. It has had life as a setting for a LARP. It has gone through iterations. And when I decided that I wanted to use it as the setting for books, you know, it was just one originally, I knew that I wanted to do something. I wanted dragons because I can't not have dragons, but I wanted to do something that was not D&D-ish with the dragons. So that is, I'm going to go ahead and it's not a spoiler either, but only because I've been talking about this from the very beginning. The dragons in my world, it's a curse. Mm-hmm. So there's a limited number of dragons and they cannot make more because it's a curse. So, and they didn't start off as dragons. They started off as humans. Yeah, that I haven't seen it done too often. There's really only a couple of things that even come to mind as being, but that's fine. You know,
right. No, I was just curious where that whole idea came from, you know, to do it this way. Let's face it, most people who write dragons, they write dragons the same way dragons are always written. And we've probably killed off most of them, and it's all the humans' fault. But I just thought it was a different take on it, and I was curious. I just wanted to pick your brain for a second.
Well, so when I sat down and decided to do some fundamental levels of world building, right? Because again, I knew what I was pushing back against was a lot of established fantasy tropes. And I didn't necessarily want to bring all those with me. So one of the things I decided very early on was that everyone was human, that everything started off as humans settling this world. And that any monsters that came into it either came about because of humans, or they just flat out used to be humans. There is one exception to that I'm not going to talk about because of spoilers, but and you haven't even gotten to it, so it's fine. But that informed everything that came after, you know. So there couldn't be a monster in the world that was independent of that connection, and that informed that, you know, the mimics and all the centaurs and all the different creatures that existed, you know, the drakes and the thriss and just all of the different the Morgagi, everybody ultimately had this single point of origin.
Which a lot of that stuff you just mentioned, I actually don't think was even introduced until Memory of Souls. The fact that they'd come, you know, they settled this world and stuff like that.
Sure. Yeah.
Which leads me to my second question, leads me to another question based on something that you just said. I would not have read Ruin of Kings thinking that this was supposed to be a standalone. So you said it was originally supposed to be one book. I assumed that before Ruin of Kings was over, you decided this was going to be more than one book. Because that's not necessarily a great place to end at the end of Ruin of Kings. There's a lot of story left.
Well, you got to understand that the first version of this book never saw the light of day. So I wrote it in my mid-20s. It was the second book I'd ever written. And it was very, 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 very different from what ended up becoming Ruin of Kings. So yeah, you're right. As it stands with the book that got published, or even the book that I found an agent with and you know, pitched a tour with, that book had to be part of a series and was meant to be part of a series.
Okay. That makes a lot more sense, because I'm sitting there thinking, it's like, there's no way a Ruin of Kings, as it was a complete story in your head. This is...
Right.
You definitely wrote something that was going to be, at minimum, a trilogy. Did you have an idea when you started writing Ruin of Kings that it was going to be five books, or is that just how long it took you to tell the story?
No, I knew it was going to be five books. Yeah. It was one of those things, right? People would come to me and be like, how did you get Tor to agree to a five book deal? And I would just be like, I told him I needed five books. That was the truth of it. It was never a trilogy. Yeah. I mean, they did ask me for a breakdown, you know, they wanted to know exactly, you know, what was going to happen when, and none of that survived contact with the enemy. But I mean, literally, like I submitted a series synopsis, and I think like a day later, my editor called me and said, have you thought about doing this and this and this and this? Have you thought about being a very strongly, we would like you to do this and this and this. And I didn't have no problem with it, because it was, I could understand where she was coming from on the points. And I have a t-shirt that says Davey is right, just to remind myself that she usually is. but she always is. But they, it basically invalidated the entire summer. I thought it was hilarious.
Gotcha. No, and I get it. I mean, too, you've got a story that you want to tell, but they've also been in the business for a while.
Right.
And also they're the one that's got the contract. And so you kind of have to, within reason.
Within reason. But, you know, I mean, truthfully, Davey has, anytime she's ever given me bad advice, it was because there was a misunderstanding, not because she was wrong. So, you know.
We're glad we got what we got.
Yeah.
Like I said, anybody who's gotten as far as I have, obviously is going to have to stick around for the next book that's coming out. And yes, I will get that, because I actually was looking forward. Oh my goodness, I blanked on the name. Book four.
The House of Always.
Thank you. The one with the Kraken on the front.
The one with the Kraken on the front. Yeah, absolutely.
You're not supposed to buy a book for its cover, but I've been totally wanting to read that book. I just love that cover. And obviously we have to figure out, it's been a while, but it's probably not a spoiler, but I'm still not going to say anything. I've got to get to where book five starts, because I know where I'm left off on book three, and I've just got to get there. By the way, is it wrong to say that I like Talon?
It's not wrong to say that you like Talon. I've gradually come around on Talon.
Well, I feel like that because, I mean, she's not necessarily the same character. To an extent, she is. She doesn't change a lot. She's not exactly the same character at the end of book three as she was in book one.
No. So and by the end of book four, she's changed a lot, actually. So, there is some...
Three ended, I'm assuming so, but let's not go there quite yet. That might be a little bit spoilerish. So,
yeah, yeah. No, she has a lot of things that happen. She's, yeah. But, yeah, I joke about this, although it's absolutely factually 100% correct. There hasn't been a book that Talon was in, because she wasn't in book two. There hasn't been a book that she was in that I didn't try to kill her.
She was mentioned in book two. They talked about her a couple
times. But she didn't show up.
Yeah.
But there hasn't been a book where I haven't tried to kill her and she keeps escaping. Like, it'll be like, I will have it set up. I'll have figured out the plot scene where she's going to die. And then I realize there's a reason why she can't die. And.
Well, she's just one of those characters. It's like you have a character on TV and it's like they're gone for episodes, like, where so-and-so. I've seen quite a few TV shows, actually, where a character was supposed to die, but the audience loves them. It's like, I know George Lucas is still kicking himself for killing off Darth Maul, but I get it. You can't, I almost feel like you can't have the story without Talon. She's kind of become integral, almost.
She's definitely become an important part of it. No, I'm not going to tell you about book five, but I will say that at the end of Ruin of Kings, when I started getting a lot of feedback from people who really liked Talon, I was surprised because I was like, but she's psycho. she's a cannibal psycho.
True. I think there's always that little bit in part of all of us where it's like, man, I wish I could live my life that way, where I just do whatever I want and didn't care.
Right. Right. Especially when because she's come from such a horrific background and, life gives her, it's an opportunity, to live her life without constraints, and she's taken it.
I do like the fact that, how she started in book one, and again, I'm assuming you planned it this way, but it sets up how she's able to do certain things in book three, for instance, getting places where she's not supposed to get.
Right.
And there's a couple of those things. I'll tell you right now, there's a couple of places in this book where I have kicked myself for not catching something that you told us early on, and it didn't register. For instance, getting back to the Kraken, him sending the Kraken after them. In book two, I should have known that he didn't need to find out where Kieran was, but I'm with Thurbishar. He's like, she's right. I did.
It was separated by a whole book. By the time I presented people with the information that they could have gone back and looked at book one and went, well, wait a minute. Why, if he could do this, why did he have to do this?
Yep. I missed it completely.
Sure. Yeah. So when somebody later points that out, then yeah, you can go back and go, oh crap. Yeah. He really didn't need to do that, did he?
Okay. If I ask a question, you can tell me if it's a spoiler. If it's a spoiler, don't answer it. Just tell me you can't answer it. Book five, who's narrating? And you tell me, if you can't tell me it, just say so.
I can tell you that because it is kind of part and parcel to the formatting of the books, is there is this, it's the downside to having a diegetic narration is mm-hmm. that you have a pretty good idea that at least that one character has to have survived. Otherwise, they can't be pulling the book together.
I'm just saying, if somebody at the end of book four doesn't know something that this will answer in book five, don't tell me. But if you did, I was just curious.
Thurbishar and Senere are pulling it together.
Gotcha.
Mutually. So they switch off, so Thurbishar is 1 and 3, Senere is 2 and 4, and then on book five, they share.
And if anybody hasn't listened to the audiobooks, I love the fact that there's multiple narrators in the audiobooks. So you get that entire feeling of them going back and forth, which I appreciated. I think that really helped move the story along and not get confused on that whole process.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably going to be, I think, the, I don't want to say the downside, but probably the thing about book five that is going to be the most different from the previous books is just the number of POVs that have shown up versus the practicality of having a different voice actor for each of them. So there's fewer of that per voices.
Did you find that was actually helpful or more difficult by starting out with this whole, and I forget, I know that I've looked up the word before, I can't say it, the one you said earlier.
Diegetic.
Point of view. Yes, thank you.
So when I first wrote the book, it was not. It was your traditional fantasy told straight from beginning to end. You know, started off when Kieran was 15, ends when he's 20, and A, B, C, D, E, D, F, G. I hated it.
No, I'll say for one, loved the, especially Thurvishar or whatever, you know, the little comments they make.
Right.
As the quote unquote narrator.
Yeah.
You know, especially Thurvishar for being like this giant, you know, powerful wizard to an extent. He's got a little self-deprecation every once in a while that sneaks in there a little bit. And you kind of appreciate that because, especially in book one, for lack of a better word, he's a little bit of a snob. I mean, we get to understand it.
Sure. Yeah.
He knows he's good. Let's put it that
way. Yeah.
But yeah, some of the little comments, especially by book two and three, or especially three, the little comments he makes when stuff hits him and he's like, you know, they were right. And the guy who does the voice on it too, I'm sure you've listened to the audio.
Oh, yeah. I love Fyodor Chin. He's amazing. And Thurvishar is what Harry Potter would have been if he was raised by Voldemort. You know, he was supposed to be the chosen one. You know, he was going to be the kid that was going to, everyone would have expected great things from if he had stayed where he was. And that didn't work out because, you know, evil wizards.
He had a lot of choices in most of his matters, that's for sure.
Yeah, none at all. And that's part of where that self-deprecation comes from.
Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Is that, you know, truth of the matter is he's done terrible things. He didn't have a choice in it, but he's still done terrible things. He has that trauma of having been literally forced to do these deeds.
Right. Even though you didn't do it on purpose, you've still seen it. And it was
right.
Your hand.
Right. So when I made the decision that Thurvishar was going to be the guy who was pulling together the events in book one in order to give it to another person, you know, that he was going to basically be handing off this almost a report of everything that went on to accomplish a very specific goal, I realized at that point that given the character I'd created, he was going to comment. He would not be able to help himself. He would annotate. He would, you know, he would leave notes. Sometimes his notes are just remarkably mansplaining. I don't know if you've caught it, but there's been times where there's been points in book one where he was literally explaining a conversation to the person who said the lines, if you want to think about it.
He'd make a good newsmaker someday, but yeah, we get it.
Yeah. So you could just imagine that person being like, yeah, I was there. I know exactly what happened here. And I think I know what I meant better than you do.
Which I think you set up Senere as a perfect foil for him, to be honest with you.
Senere and Thurvishar are quite an interesting pair. Mm-hmm. And
she's the one that won't take any of his crap, that's for sure. I also love, I can't remember where, I think you either read it or heard it. I saw an interview you did somewhere. Like I said, it might have been just, you know, a writing, not necessarily a video.
Right.
But the fact that you, the reason, part of the reason you picked, wow, I just tripped over her name, Senna.
Senere.
Thank you. I said her name a minute ago.
You did.
The reason you picked Senere to basically be the narrator in the second one is because you knew it would annoy Thervishar. And I loved that. I don't remember when I saw that, but I did love that comment.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, from the very beginning, Senere enters into this story with this not adversarial relationship with Thervishar, but adversarial in a scholastic sense, right? Like where she's looking at his work, his academic work, and going, no, this is sloppy. This is badly done. This is, you know, and here's how it should be done. And it didn't, and is so incensed on an academic level about this that she does her own version of this book, even though it's not really a good idea, you know, to be pulling this together the way she is. And then it just becomes this rivalry in footnotes, you know, through the course of the series.
And I don't want to say this because I don't want it to make it sound like I'm boiling it down to this, but something that you just said when I was thinking about those two reminds me a little bit of Sheldon and Amy, if you've watched The Big Bang Theory, where she's
not.
Okay. So he's Mr. Know-It-All. Also, I think they don't actually come out and say it, but he's got the little bit of where he doesn't recognize, you know, kind of Asperger's. He doesn't recognize people's body language, stuff like that. But he's very much, so he doesn't get it when people sometimes are mocking him. It's just like, he thinks they're so like, yes, I am the smartest person in the world. And she is just as smart and is like the one person who can like, yeah, okay, no, that's not how it works. You know, she's like the one person that can take him down a notch.
Right.
Like I said, I'm not saying that's an exact match, but it reminded me a little bit of it when you're talking about it like that. It's like, I kind of see that same relationship. One of the things we were coming up to, obviously this is book five. You've been writing it longer than this, but you know, the first book dropped in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a few years. And this has been the story you've been telling for all these years. I was originally going to ask you if you were going to take a break, but when I was looking at your website the other day, I saw a little thing up there about Sky on Fire showing 20%.
Yep.
I'm going to assume you're not taking a break.
Nope.
Do you have anything about Sky of Fire that you can share with people at this point, or are we still focused on Chorus of Dragons?
No, I'm not at all focused on Chorus of Dragons. That, as far as my involvement, is done. It's out. You know, I still am talking about it, articles and interviews and those sorts of things, but in terms of creative output, done. So early on for Rune of Kings, I would get a lot of feedback from people, questions from people who would be like, so are people going to be able to ride these dragons? And I would laugh and be like, oh no, absolutely not. You can try, but I don't recommend it. These dragons are not friendly. They're never going to be friendly. They're not misunderstood. They're not, you know, these dragons are horrible, universally horrible. But that idea kind of stuck with me. And, you know, certainly doing Dragon Riders is not is the opposite of an original idea. It's been done a ton. It's been done all over the place. But I did have a thought, which was, what happens to a society that is based around this relationship of Dragon Riders if the dragons aren't the equivalent of slightly more intelligent winged dogs? What happens in a society when the dragons are actually every bit as intelligent as the humans, maybe more so? What does that do? And what it does is some really interesting things where, you know, the humans aren't necessarily in charge anymore, because you have these creatures that are physically powerful, incredibly intelligent, have all of these advantages, and there are reasons why humans can't just do the normal thing and enslave or ditch or, you know, all the stuff that humans typically do in these situations. So that kind of dominoed. It started, you know, creating this story that kept kind of nagging me to write about dragon riders, but about these relationships. Because here's the thing, if dragons have that level of intelligence, then the idea that you're going to show up at the hatching of a dragon and develop a mental bond with this dragon that is never going to go away and that you can't get rid of starts to become something kind of out of a horror story. So it ends up being, it's dragon riders, it's a bit darker than what people might be used to for this sort of story.
I don't know, after Rune of Kings, I'm not too sure about that. I think that's kind of what they expect from you.
Well, from me, maybe, but...
Yeah. Well, I'm not claustrophobic at all, but the way the old man keeps his musicians together, that's a horrifying concept.
Yeah, that was a suggestion of my husband. Gotcha. we were coming up with brainstorming stuff, and he's like, "What about this?" I'm like, "Oh, that's just so wrong." Yeah, okay, we're gonna do that. And I mean, it's truth of the matter is like a lot of the dragons have that sort of, they hoard, and what they hoard is very often horrifying. I mean, you know, when you think about what some of the dragons, even besides the old man, yeah, it's.
Yeah, I did like the fact that you also, I mean, your dragons, obviously, again, we've already covered this. We know that they were humans and they do hoard things, but it's, they all hoard something different. It's not like they all hoard gold or, you know, what you expect from in
right. Your
typical, and again, I know you're trying to get away from the D&D, but that typical D&D setting, this is definitely not.
No. No, I very much wanted to make sure that it wasn't. I mean, there's some of the D&D roots I think that still show. I think you could look at the four main races and you can kind of go, yeah, human, elf, dwarf, you know, orc. But I tried really hard to not have it fall into that quite so neatly.
Gotcha.
So
I did like, without going into, again, I won't spoil it, but I did like the reason it didn't work on the Vane. I thought that was an interesting take that I was not expecting when I got down to that.
Yeah, I like sometimes playing with the idea of the things that everyone knows, the things that are just communal accepted knowledge versus what might actually be true, because we do that a lot as people. You know, you get myths and you get stories and you get things that get accepted as truth, and they're not always truth.
Yeah, so. I think it helps set you apart, though, too. I mean, like, let's face it. How many dragon stories are there on the bookshelves in the sci-fi section? Ruin of Kings, just if nothing else, the take on it stands out. You know, you're doing it. Yes, it's what I would consider normal fantasy, but there's a curveball.
Right.
So people who want their fantasy story, they're getting their fantasy story. But they're also not getting every other dragon fantasy story that's been written. They're not getting every other god story that's been written.
Right.
You tend to take a different take on all of it. Like we talked about, you know, even the gods aren't what we expect of them. And again, maybe I'm trying to avoid spoilers, but, you know, it's...
Well, that thing I said about everything starts off as human, that applied to the gods too.
I didn't know if we wanted to say that, but yeah, it was...
That's fine.
Like I said, it's, you know, nothing. But again, there's another thing that you tied in, which I appreciated. The God Kings. By the way, especially the one of the little houses. I enjoyed that little side joke immensely there. But the fact that, you know, their power actually comes, and we've seen this in stories before, but it was always about the gods. In this case, it was the God Kings getting that power again by creating something in some way that it's through the worship.
Right.
We may not be, it may not be explained per se why that works in this world, but it is there. And again, it's one of those things where, you know, we've kind of maybe seen this before, but never in the way that you've used it before. And the fact that the God Kings can aspire to become the gods, even though they became gods again in a completely different path.
Right.
How much of your story is like everything that's like, okay, this is a great unique gift, But I got it because I'm cursed. there's a lot of cursing going on. And I don't mean cussing. I mean, there's cursing going on.
Sure, sure. Lines. You know, and there's a lot of power corrupts. And there's a lot of, you know, things that I think if you had these incredible powers given to you, and in the case of the God Kings or the case of the Guardians, in both cases, they eventually start defending their power base rather than, you know, we're going to just concentrate on helping people or protecting people. Because, you know, I mean, all you have to do is look around the world and know people in power tend to want to stay in power and tend not to really want to let go of that. So there's no reason to expect it would be better if you're talking about power that involves immortality and, you know, vast cosmic.
By the way, another thing I loved about Thervishar, I just thought of this. And I can't think of the name now because I've got Monalvani stuck in my head. The other M guys, the one with the spiky arms.
Morgaghi.
Morgaghi, yes.
Morgaghi.
I loved the whole speech he did where he, you know, maybe they deserve some of your respect. I thought that was an excellent speech. I just wanted to tell you that. I love that line.
Thank you. Yeah, no. There's a couple of times in the series where like T'Raith gets one in the first book, Thervishar gets one in book three, where they really kind of get to, weirdly, both of those people are very, I don't want to say moral, because particularly in T'Raith's case, he's an assassin. He has no problem with killing and doing horrible, violent things. But there is this sense that both of them get very upset by the injustices of the world. So that comes out in both of those speeches. And in Thervishar's case, yeah, he had this opportunity to point out someone's hypocrisy and he didn't pass it up. So
no, not at all. I don't feel like he could, though. I don't think that's in his nature. It's funny, as much as he seems to be the calm-headed one most of the time, I think if you put him in a certain situation, he doesn't care if the other person can kill him with a thought. He's still going to stand up for what's right.
Yeah, yeah, I would definitely say that's true.
There's a couple of things that you covered that I felt that I think you handled really well, and I was just wondering how much time you put into the concept of it. Especially the one was the whole, I've got Tenye stuck in my head. And this is a question that just popped in my head that I didn't have it written down. But no, the one, the Jorashash,
Jortiz.
Thank you.
Oh, it's okay.
Goodness.
It's okay.
This is what happens when you just listen to the audiobook and don't have it in front of you. But the whole concept, I mean, she had another word for it, but it's basically honor. And, you know,
right.
The fact that it was very much that it was earned and you owed the honor to somebody, but it was also because that is how, you know, a kingdom was, or a king was a king or a ruler over what they could.
Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
It wasn't about what they could gather, what they could get for themselves. It's about the people that they could protect. And that whole concept I thought was done really, really well. I feel like it's maybe something we don't have a lot of in this day where we don't necessarily respect certain people, but it's also because I think a lot of leaders, and I'm not going to get political, I'm not just talking about the U.S., I'm just talking about in general. There's a lot of people that become leaders because they want the power, not because they're serving the people.
Right, right. Yeah, you see a lot of demagogues, particularly in the modern world. And that's the idea is power. the Jorah tease, Jorah as a whole was really interesting in that that was, you know, most writers have situations where they have a character who will rebel and will kind of go off and try to do their own thing, and they have to try to, you know, wrangle them back under control. Jorah was the first time I ever had a whole society do that, because I had planned originally on having Jorah be much more of a sort of traditionally medieval south of France kind of place, you know, where you had a more feudal society and you had all of these sorts of, you know, parts of it, the parts of book two that are basically me riffing on Ivanhoe are right in there, you know, but everybody, not just a single person, like everybody rebelled and basically were like, no, this isn't how we're going to set up the society. This isn't how the Jortees are going to do things. And it was really interesting to do that. Probably one of my favorite scenes in the entire series is quite honestly in book two, when the Baron, who has messed up on this, this protecting everyone, effectively is given his walking papers, because it was such a thing that could never happen in this world. It was such a thing that could only happen under that culture and by people who have bought in on this culture. There was the idea that the entire community could, that to some extent they actually were aware of the power that they had in a way that medieval societies were never aware of the power that they had, where they could be like, no, you only are in charge because you have proven worthy to be in charge. The moment that is no longer true, somebody else who can actually do the job gets to take over.
Right. You've got Kor, where it's basically comes down to a battle of who's the strongest, as to where Jorah, it's about who's the best leader.
Right.
Who is taking care of the people the best. And I love the fact that you managed to bring this, because I think we have a hard time, everybody, when we see a culture that's not like ours, we have a hard time wrapping our heads around it sometimes. And I think you did a good job of, like I said, showing that, you know, these are different cultures living in the same area. There's, I feel a lot of times, especially, and again, this may just be me as an American, I mean, yes, we've got Canada to the north, we got Mexico to the south, but compared to a place like Europe, where there's country, culture, I just don't think that, I think the West has very much almost become, to a certain extent, a culture.
Right.
As to where, you know, so we don't always have to deal, quote unquote. I mean, yeah, you can have, look, there's a little bit of a culture in the Southeast versus the Northwest, stuff like that, just because we're so big. But I don't feel like we have to deal with this. And actually, I think we'd be better if we would spend more time studying other cultures and just, not even cultures, just people, and going, okay, what's your point of view, and actually listening to that.
Right.
I don't have to agree with something another culture does, but I would at least like to know why they do it. You know, maybe there's a reason.
Right.
Heaven forbid, I say this as a white male, I might be wrong about something. You know, I don't believe the exact same things I believed when I was 18. And I would hate to think that I did, to be honest.
That would get, that would be interesting.
I feel like a lot of our cultures, we get to a certain age, again, and I can't speak for other cultures, but at least here in America, where we get to a certain age and we're set.
Yeah.
And we don't, we like to argue, but we don't like to listen.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, there's a very famous quote that the problem with the modern day is that we only listen as far as we're trying to figure out what we're going to say next.
Exactly.
Instead of listening to actually understand. And I mean, a pet peeve of mine, one of many, I have thousands, is the, so in so many fantasy stories, the way that cultures are homogenous, you know, and it's all just kind of one big culture, even if it's different countries and different areas. And that,
I feel like they go one way. They either go homogenous, like you said, or they go good and bad.
Yeah.
You can't just be different. That's not a lot.
Right. Yeah. And that was definitely a thing that I didn't want for anybody, you know, like the Jortees, that's not a perfect culture. There's some real problems with that culture. You know, there's things they do really well, but you know, you wouldn't want to be a nerd in that culture.
No, I don't think we've got a lot of places for those.
No, it's a whole culture of jocks. You know, it's, you know, and it's also very binary in a lot of its thinking. So, you know, you're either male or female, and the fact that something in between is called a gelding, which, I mean, when that first came out, when that idea first came out, there were some people who were very upset about it. And I was like, it's bad. It's problematic. It was meant to be. It's not meant to be perfect.
I think the funny thing is I read it very differently, and maybe it's because I read it after the fact. I read it much more as the fact that you brought in this whole idea of stallion and mare, and it wasn't necessarily you were born this way, so
right, no,
this is your role. You know, it was basically up to them. It's like, you know, what right. role do I want to be, regardless of my sex?
Right. But that's what I mean when I say that it's still very binary. You know, physical appearance and biology aside, you're still expected to choose one of those and stay in your lane. You know, if you say you're a man, you're expected to behave a certain way. If you say you're a woman, you're expected to behave a certain way. And there isn't a lot of leeway or understanding for somebody who says they're a man but wants to engage in behaviors that are considered a woman's place.
Gotcha.
You know, so that's problematic. That's deeply problematic. Far from being perfect, because I just didn't want, I wanted these cultures to be imperfect. Felt very strongly that they should be. Most cultures.
I just thought you handled very well Kieran's struggle to understand where Janelle was coming from, because she was in the Jortees. Because I think, let's face it, there's a lot of us that probably still have a hard time. Is like, wait, what? You know, we're stuck in that mode because, I mean, let's face it, we've been here for thousands of years, where we would have that idea, have a hard time wrapping our heads around the fact is like, well, what do you mean you're a stallion? You're a woman. What do you mean? What do you mean he's a mare? He's a guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And because we want to pick those roles and stick them to a certain sex.
Right. Yeah. And I'm quite honestly, writing Janelle is some of the hardest writing I've ever had to do. And it was really very eye-opening to me because I kept trying to write her as a woman. I kept trying to have her do things the way a woman would do those things. And I kept having to pull myself back and be like, no, that's not how she would behave. Because even if she looks like a woman and she calls herself female and she uses female pronouns, societally, she has been raised with this behavior as being normal for her. And this behavior doesn't match those things. I didn't expect it to be as challenging as it was, because I write men and women all the time. You know, it never occurred to me that that would be difficult to write, but it was a little bit humbling.
I did feel like your finished product, though, was very, very well done. It wasn't, you know, necessarily the slap in the face to Kieran. It was like, what do you mean you don't understand it? This is obvious. But it also wasn't the fact that he was just, I got it. I was like, no, is it this? He took time to process. And I love the fact that you came back to that with, almost said Terrell.
Tereth.
Yes, thank you. Tereth later. He's, you know, it's funny because he's known her in this previous life, but this isn't the same
woman,
for lack of a better word.
Right? Yeah.
She likes almost refers to herself as girl versus, you know, woman sometimes. Because when she was younger.
Right.
But the fact that he's still wrapping his head around some of these same things and learning that, you know, he's got this perfect recollection of all his past lives, and she's only getting to this point to an extent. And so the whole he brought it back to later where he was asking her about the I keep wanting to go back to Tenye, and I know that's not the right thing, the honor one.
Sudage.
Thank you, Sudage. I needed to write these down. Too many questions actually pop in my head after I start talking to people. But the Sudaje, you know, he didn't understand that concept. And the fact that he's like, you know, was finally like, you know, you need to explain this to me. I need to understand.
Right, right.
Which is not necessarily something that the every guy would be willing to do, saying, you know, go and like ask. He's like, I don't understand what's going on. Can you explain it to me? We like to talk, and I guess as a male, I feel like I can say this. We like to sometimes talk about us understanding something that we have no clue, and we're just making stuff up on the spot. Sorry if I let the cat out of the bag there. But
it's okay. I'm aware.
I just thought that you wrote very good male characters. I mean, some were the prototypical males, but there was also some that, like, you've had this wide spectrum.
Well, I think there should be a wide spectrum. I mean, I think it's the same way with women. There should be a wide, we're multitudes, you know, right. there should be all of us. And certainly Tirith had some, the fact that he could remember his past life from basically the very beginning was a real handicap for him, because he kept trying to behave as if these people were, Janelle in particular, were the people he remembered, mm-hmm. you know, was going to behave like the woman he remembered. And she wasn't, and she didn't. And it kept tripping him up, you know, that he thought he had this emotional connection with somebody who not only didn't remember him, but wasn't going to put up with him treating her the way that he wanted to.
Right. Now, you could argue that the woman he loved doesn't exist anymore.
You could argue successfully, I think. Yeah. You know, she's literally not that person. And he had all kinds of other issues going on too. But yeah, no, I think that I like to give people the opportunity to be both very smart and very dumb as appropriate. And, you know, again, those culture clashes were interesting to me. So thank you.
And
on the
spectrum, you also gave us Darzin, which I think was pretty much the prototypical 1950s male. That's besides the point.
Yeah. Darzin's probably the worst thing I've ever written in terms of no redeeming qualities whatsoever. Yeah.
Gadrick might be in the running, but yeah, Darzin was just not a nice guy.
Gadrick at least like had convinced himself that he was going to accomplish some good things. I mean, that was a lie, but you know, he kind of had.
A lot of us humans can convince ourselves we're doing something right.
Right. Darzin didn't even have that. You know, Darzin was a nihilist. You know, he really did want to watch the world burn. And
as long as he could be the one to light the match, he wanted to be in the thick of it, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. He wanted to be the one to light the match. That's and put out the spread out the kindling, hopefully. So.
He was definitely the kid that, you know, stepped on ants just because he could.
Yeah,
we saw that
no question.
With how he treated the slaves in that, especially in the first book.
Yeah,
Was that the second book or
first book? Okay. He was in the second book as well because the first book and the second book take place right. Simultaneously.
I've just like done them all in a big stream lately, and I'm like, wait, where did that cut off at again?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No. In point of fact, I know we're running way over at this point, but.
There's no limit. I just try not to keep everybody more than an hour because you got lives and stuff. And
I think part of the reason why like people took to Cenere so much in the second book is because your first introduction to her is her basically just saying that, asking if Darzin can be raised from the dead so she can kill him a second time. And I think that endeared her immediately to an awful lot of people.
I think it helped because when she was first introduced, she was not exactly the nicest person in the storyline either.
No. And unlike Thurvishar, she could not claim that she was being controlled. You know, that was not, she was, I mean, let's just not mince words. She was a terrorist. And she killed an awful lot of people. And, you know, she was a believer. You know, she thought she was doing it for all the right reasons, but I think a lot of people do terrible things for what they think are all the right reasons.
Yeah. Well, you would hope that most people who do terrible things aren't doing it just because, like, what's the worst thing I could do today?
Right. Right. Yeah. No, Darzin being my exception, they're every single person, you know, running through the books is somebody who's convinced themselves that they're doing the right thing.
The other thing, and I'm going to give you, I see it's after eight now, but one more thing I wanted to talk, I didn't necessarily talk about, one more other thing I wanted to say to you, which I really appreciated, especially considering how short time-wise this series is, from the time you started writing it to now, other than a few notable exceptions, I may throw Gadrith and Darzin in there, but you know, they're also over with now.
Yeah.
Most of your characters grow. I see a lot of series where the person in book one is the same as the exact same person in book five. They haven't grown any. They haven't learned any. I'm only three books in, and I can already see that almost all of your characters are not the same person they were in book one. And it's not a change on a dime sort of thing. Game of Thrones, anyone? It's, you know, it's much more a things have happened to them. They've learned new things, and oh my goodness, they've actually learned from those new things,
right?
Which, you know, I think a lot of other, I won't throw all authors under this, because you know, I think that there are a lot of good ones that have got these stories, but a lot of times they take these stories and it may take 15 books for this person to mature out of who they were in book one, and of course a lot of stuff's happening to your guys in a short amount of time. But I appreciated the fact that, you know, the Kieran, the Tarraith, even the Janelle, et cetera, and so forth, that we're seeing in book three is not the same as book one. And when most people in your books are presented with something new that goes against everything that they've thought this whole time, it's not that they necessarily accept it right away, but they pause, they stop, they think. And in quite a few cases, they've actually changed their minds, or at least take into account the fact that, you know, maybe things aren't what I thought they were.
Right.
And I just feel like if we as a society could have a little bit more of your characters in that way in our lives, we'd all be a little bit better off. But anyhow, like I said, it has been a little bit over an hour. I don't want to keep you all night. I feel like we're probably not going to be able to talk a lot about of Sky of Fire. That was the name of it, correct?
The Sky on Fire.
Sky on Fire, thank you. Without getting into spoilers or stuff, you said 20% in. I mean, the what you have now may obviously not be what it ends up turning out to be eventually.
Right, yeah. I mean, there's always... I have the story very well planned out at this point, but of course, even once it gets sold, because this is not a manuscript that is being written already attached to a contract at this point. This is, you know... then I'll have to deal with it, an editor and their opinions, and try to, so it may not end up that way. But as of right now, I know very, very strongly what's going to happen. I've been describing the book to people as the Witcher meets the Hobbit by way of Dragon Riders of Pern.
Okay. I didn't have the Witcher in my brain, but I will tell you right now, I literally had Dragon Riders of Pern and Smaug going through my head before you ever said that. That's exactly how I was thinking about it, just based on your description. We'll have to see how The Witcher throws in there. So now I'm even more interested. So somebody needs to pick this up.
The Witcher comes into it with a very grumpy main character.
Well, you got to have at least one grumpy main character. If somebody's not yelling, get off your lawn, are you really trying?
Right, yeah.
But, I mean, obviously we've got book five to look forward to. I keep putting the in this place in the wrong place. Is it Discord of the Gods or the Discord of Gods?
The Discord of Gods.
Okay, I cannot get that set in my head. So that's obviously coming up. But I also wanted to let your fans know that this will not be the end. And it sounds like you're already viciously, I don't know, viciously is the word, writing the next book as well.
Enthusiastically.
There's a good one. All right. Well, I am going to go ahead and call it for now. If anybody's watching on Twitch, like I said, feel free to hit the follow button. I don't ask people for money. If you do have a Amazon Prime subscription, though, you automatically, if you don't know this, you get a free subscription that you can use on Twitch once per month.
It's true.
If you use that on me, I won't complain about it. Otherwise, if anybody missed anything, came in late, anything like that, feel free to swing by YouTube tomorrow. My YouTube link is also in the about underneath. And other than that, I'm just going to thank Jen Lyons for joining us today. I thoroughly appreciate it, enjoyed it. And we'll be looking forward to what comes next.
All right. Thank you very much for having me here.
Thank you, ma'am.